Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Anna Kempner. This is a case that has been going on for 7 months now. That's the distance between Anna Kempner's body being found aboard the Carnival Horizon and her accused killer sitting at a defense table in a federal courtroom in Miami. 7 months. Kind of quick, really, for a murder case. In the federal system, 7 months from discovery to a body to jury selection is not normal. It is barely heard of. Cases at this level, two felony counts, life in prison on the table, a 16-year-old defendant, wall-to-wall media coverage. It takes a year or more, usually, routinely, to reach trial. Defense attorneys file continuances. They ask for extensions to review discovery. They retain experts, schedule depositions, argue pretrial motions. That process usually stretches for months before a jury ever gets seated. Not here. Timothy Hudson, the 16-year-old stepbrother accused of killing Anna aboard that cruise ship, is set to go to trial on June 1st of 2026 at the Wickie D. Ferguson Jr. Federal Courthouse in Miami. Two federal felony counts, maximum sentence of life in federal prison on each. He pled not guilty on April 22nd, and his defense team has not asked for a single day of additional time. That's what we're going to kind of get into today, as this trial's like set to start in just a few weeks. Your thoughts in the comment section as we work through this. Substack and YouTube are the best places to do that, for us to see them and interact. Links are in the description. This isn't a rehash of what happened on the Carnival Horizon. You know the case. I want to talk to you about what's ahead. And if you don't know the case well, guess what? We got gazillions of pieces of content all about it. Just look back for Anna Kempner in our feed, and you can educate yourself literally for days and days and days of nonstop coverage if you watch all of it. There's tons of hours of it, so have at it. What I want to talk to you about is what's ahead, what this trial is going to look like, what the jury is and isn't going to hear, and why this thing is moving at a pace that should make everyone pay a little closer attention. The mechanics first, because they explain the clock. Under the Federal Speedy Trial Act, once an indictment is filed and a defendant enters a plea, the government has 70 days to bring the case to trial. The superseding indictment in this case was returned by a federal grand jury on March 10th. Hudson was arraigned on April 22nd. The defense has not filed a single motion to continue. June 1st falls well within 70 days of the window. Prosecutors have estimated approximately 7 days of testimony, with jury selection and proceedings spanning basically a two-week period. That timeline isn't unusual on its own. What's unusual is the defense's posture. In almost every federal case carrying this kind of exposure, the defense asks for more time. They need it. Discovery in this case includes every FBI report, every forensic analysis, every witness statement, every piece of surveillance footage from the Carnival Horizon. The government provided its first discovery response in February 19th. That gives the defense roughly 3.5 months to absorb all of it and build a trial strategy for a case where their client's life is on the line. For a case of this magnitude, that is razor thin. And this is not about whether you think he's guilty or not. This is about due process. And the weird thing is, they seem to be fine with all of this from a defense perspective. And look, I don't know. Maybe they got a strategy here. I'm not here to say they don't. I'm just saying this seems a little weird, a little rushed, a little odd. Not that I don't think this kid is guilty of sin. I do. I don't think there's really much question about it. But what's driving these decisions? Is it him? Because if you're a defense attorney and you're trying to provide the best vigorous defense you can for your client, rushing through this just seems bizarre. But again, it could be a strategy. Everybody has different outlooks on this, on what's going to benefit their client most. I'm giving you my opinion. That's what this piece is. It is an opinion. It is not a fact of statement about who might be driving this or the decisions that might be being made or who might be railroading this through. I don't know the answer to those questions, but I certainly have thoughts and opinions, and this is them. So why would a defense team accept that timeline? There are real answers to that question, and they deserve serious consideration because this might be one of the smartest defense plays we've seen in a federal case in a long time. Maybe. Let's look at it from that angle. Start with the biggest move. On February 23rd, Timothy Hudson, with the advice of his federal public defender, signed a written waiver requesting that his case be transferred from the juvenile system to adult criminal court. Not a passive acceptance, a signed written request. The prosecution filed the transfer motion the next day. Judge Beth Bloom entered the transfer order on February 26th. The grand jury returned the superseding indictment 12 days after that. The entire transfer process that usually takes weeks of contested hearings, done in days. On its face, it makes no sense. Why would a 16-year-old facing life in prison ask to be tried as an adult? Because when you're in that position prior, you're not necessarily facing life in prison yet. You're a 16-year-old facing the consequences of a juvenile. Once you understand what the juvenile system takes away, the logic, I don't know, maybe it clicks. It's still a little gray for me. Under the Federal Juvenile Delinquency Act, there are no jury trials. A single judge evaluates the evidence and decides guilt or innocence. One person, one legal mind, reviewing every piece of forensic evidence, every FBI report, every witness statement. If the evidence is overwhelming, a federal judge is going to see it for exactly what it is. But would it be a life sentence? Probably guilty by the judge alone, but the consequences might not be those adult court type consequences. So that's it's kind of weighing the options there. Adult court gives you a jury, 12 citizens who each have to be individually, you know, convicted beyond a reasonable doubt. 12 people who have to look at a 16-year-old and unanimously agree that he deserves to spend the rest of his life in a federal prison. If one of those 12 hesitates, one person who can't reconcile the severity of the charges with the age of the defendant, one person who gets stuck on a single gap in the evidence, one person who just can't get there, it's a hung jury, mistrial. The whole thing resets. That's a calculated bet. And for a defense team that's seen the discovery and knows what the forensic picture looks like, it might be the best bet available. In their mind, apparently it is. Speed serves the defense in another critical way. Right now, Hudson is on pretrial release. He's actually living with his uncle in a rural part of Central Florida wearing a GPS ankle monitor. Under the terms of his release, he's allowed out during the day in his uncle's custody and has been permitted to work with his father, Thomas Hudson, at a landscaping business. But that freedom is hanging by a thread. Federal prosecutors have filed a motion to revoke his release, arguing that the juvenile release order no longer applies now that he's an adult. And it's an adult case, and that under the Bail Reform Act, Hudson should be detained as a danger to others. That ruling has not come down yet. Every week between now and June 1st is another week the judge could take him into custody. That matters more than people realize. A 16-year-old walking into a federal courtroom in street clothes, sitting at a defense table with family behind him in a gallery, that is fundamentally a different image for a jury than a teenager escorted in from federal holding facilities. Jurors say it doesn't affect them. Research, it says otherwise. The defense needs Hudson free on trial day. And speed is the best way to protect that. There's a third layer. The defense has had the government's discovery since February 19th. They've seen the FBI reports. They've seen the forensic. They've seen what is in that autopsy report the Miami-Dade Medical Examiner has refused to release publicly. If there are weaknesses in the prosecution's case, forensic gaps, timeline inconsistencies, anything that creates reasonable doubt, you don't give the government 12 months to shore those up. You force them to go with what they have right now. Rushing to trial when the evidence is imperfect is a textbook defense move. And the fact that the defense is sprinting might tell you something about what they see in that discovery package. Might. That's key in all this. Might. That's one side of the coin. All of that is a legitimate strategy. All of it could fully explain every decision that's been made. Judge over jury, or jury over judge, rather. Speed over delay. Protect pretrial freedom. Force the prosecution's hand. If that's the whole story, this is a defense team making the best of a bad hand. And maybe doing it well. We'll find out. So what does June 1st actually look like? Because regardless of the strategy, what matters is what happens inside that courtroom. And a lot of people following this case are going to be surprised by what they hear and what they don't. Jury selection is going to be a fight. This case has been national news for 7 months. Anna Kempner's name, the Carnival Horizon, the circumstances of her death, it's been everywhere. Finding 12 people in the Southern District of Florida who can credibly say they haven't formed an opinion is going to require extensive questioning. Both sides will be looking for different jurors. The prosecution wants people who can absorb difficult evidence and deliver a verdict without flinching. The defense wants anyone who might hesitate at the idea of sending a teenager away for life. Voir dire alone could eat days. The prosecution's case will likely occupy the bulk of that estimated 7-day testimony window. Expect the FBI's investigation from the moment the Carnival Horizon docked at Port Miami, crime scene evidence from inside the cabin, the medical examiner's findings. The cause of death has to be determined to be medical asphyxia, which is when physical force prevents someone from breathing. Surveillance footage from the ship, witness testimony, the physical evidence chain, all that. And then there's the autopsy report. As of mid-April, the Miami-Dade Medical Examiner has declined to release it publicly, citing the active criminal investigation exemption. That report has been in the hands of both of the prosecution and the defense since discovery was provided in February. But the public has never seen it. At trial, its contents will be presented as evidence, meaning the jury and anyone in that courtroom will hear what's in it for the first time. Whatever that report contains, both sides have had months to prepare for it. The jury will not have had that luxury. The defense's strategy at trial is the open question. Hudson pled not guilty. His mother told his father in text messages days after Anna's death that their son kept repeating he couldn't remember anything. She confirmed in a December court hearing that he was taking medication for ADHD and insomnia, and that he had not taken the insomnia medication for 2 nights on the cruise, including the night before Anna was found. Pause for a quick second here, because we always get this. I'm not talking about you. That's for anybody out there right now who takes ADHD medication and goes, well, I didn't kill anybody. Last I checked, this is about Anna Kempner, not you. Okay? Okay. I'm glad we're good with that. It's like same with homeschooling. People get so triggered. Like, I'm not saying anything negative about homeschooling when we talk. I'm talking about these specific cases and the way these people specifically did it. If you're getting overly triggered by shit like that, you may want to take a closer look inside, because maybe you're not the happiest with your homeschooling past or whatever medication you might be on. Just saying. Or you're extremely narcissistic, one of the two. Or three, I don't know. I don't know. I feel weird when it's like these are just elements of the case, and then I get comments, well, I didn't do that. We're not fucking talking about you. What are you? No shit. I digress. You probably think that too, when you're reading the comments, like, yeah, that's so? Who are you? I eat lots of pizza 69Z or whatever the fuck the handles are. It's like, I swear to God, sometimes people just go through YouTube looking to try and imprint themselves onto stories and then be offended by the elements of the stories. Well, none of it has anything. People go through life doing this too. They tend to be unhappy individuals. Continuing on. Whether the defense builds its case around memory mental state, medication side effects is something else entirely. That is what this trial will reveal. We don't know their theory yet. June 1st is when we find out. There's also a wrinkle in the detention fight I mentioned earlier. The defense has pushed back on the government's motion, arguing Hudson has complied with every condition of release, but prosecutors raised a specific concern because Hudson was released without a bond under the juvenile statute. If he violates conditions right now, the only consequence is a contempt proceeding rather than bond forfeiture. They consider that inadequate for someone facing life in prison. Whether Hudson walks into that courtroom as a free person or from a federal facility is an open question. And here's something you also need to understand what's going on. Federal rules of evidence are going to control what the jury hears. A lot of what the public has consumed over the past 7 months, the family court proceedings, the custody battles between Hudson's parents, the sealed juvenile records, the media interviews with people connected to the family, much of that likely never to be presented to a jury. The trial will be significantly narrower, more controlled version of the story than what people have been following in the press and online. It's not a flaw in the system. That's how the federal trial works. But it means the jury is going to be making their decisions based on a version of events that might look very different from the one the public thinks it knows, which may be why they're trying to get this thing going. There's one more thing worth sitting with, and I want to be careful about how I say it because I'm not drawing any conclusions. I'm raising a question. Timothy Hudson is 16 years old. The written waiver, the decision to pursue adult court, the acceptance of this timeline, those are legally his decisions, made with the advice of expert federal public defenders. That's how it's supposed to work. But a 16-year-old doesn't process a decision like this in isolation. He's spending his days with his father. His mother is married to Anna's father. The adults closest to him have access His mother was married to his father. I did say that correctly. Because it's a divorced couple. I just want to make sure. For some reason, that didn't sound right to me. His mother is married to Anna's father. That is correct. The adults closest to him have access and influence. And that's just the reality of being a kid facing something this enormous. There's an alignment worth noticing here, and it might mean nothing, but it's worth bringing up. If you're thinking about the best possible defense one can have, and like, why would you want this kid to have the best possible defense? He clearly, because I think everybody should have a good defense, because that's their right in this country. That's why. Whether you're innocent or guilty, that's how we work. It's not, well, you look pretty nasty and bad. Let's give you a really shitty attorney. Or let's have you make these decisions, or let's influence your decisions because you're a 16-year-old. And this is best for everybody, dude. Yeah, buddy, let's do this. Let's do it like that. Because that's bullshit. If the reason he went ahead and is wanting to have this trial fast, because that actually is his decision, the right to a speedy trial, and those decisions are being based on somebody else pushing him for their own reasons because it might benefit them a little bit better, that's not okay. That is not okay. A longer defense timeline could have widened the lens beyond the cabin and into the household. Sworn testimony in Brevard County Family Court has already put physical altercations on the record. Andrew Hudson, Timothy's older brother, testified in December of 25 that he was placed in a chokehold and restrained by Chantel and Christopher Kempner. According to Fox News Digital's reporting from that hearing, both parents have filed allegations of instability against each other in ongoing custody proceedings. People close to Anna, including her ex-boyfriend's family and her maternal aunt, reported concerns about the stepbrother's behavior before the cruise. So there's that. Concerns that were allegedly dismissed. A defense team with a year to prepare could have built a case around that household environment. A fast trial keeps the lens right where it is. And I'm just saying, there's a vested interest in keeping it right where it is and not over this direction. Not saying anybody, taught him to go, here's how you go kill her or anything like that. But I am saying, you know, it adds a little more noise. It adds a little more context to the mind of a 16-year-old. I'm not trying to dismiss this in any way, shape, or form, or remove guilt where guilt is due. I'm just pointing out the obvious. Is that the motivation? I don't know the answer to that. I'm saying it could be. Anything could be. So could the other things I pointed out. Maybe that's a coincidence. Maybe speed is purely the right legal call and the rest is noise. I don't know. But the question is fair, and I think you guys deserve to sit with it, because there's a lot of noise over there in that household. Chokehold allegations of the older brother with Anna's father. The allegations that they knew about potential abuse that was going on and ignored it. Those aren't nothing. And they may weigh differently in the mind of a jury if a defense has more than a handful of months to put together a case. Just saying. Again, I don't know. I don't know. Those are the allegations. That's my opinion. On June 1st, 12 people who have probably never heard Anna Kempner's name will sit in a jury box in Miami and take on the weight of this case. They'll hear the evidence, they'll see the forensics, they'll listen to testimony, and they'll be asked to decide whether the person accused of taking her life spends his remaining years in a federal prison. Anna Kempner was 18 years old. She was a senior at Temple Christian School in Titusville. She was a cheerleader. Her family says she wanted to be in the Navy. She boarded the Carnival Horizon on November 2nd with her father, her grandparents, her stepmother, her stepbrother, and her younger sibling, and she did not come home. The legal system moved fast on this one, whether it moved carefully enough, whether the right questions were asked, the right evidence was developed, the right protections were in place for everyone involved, is what June 1st will start to answer. We'll be watching for Anna. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage of this case. And giving your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. It's kind of like Murdaugh in a way, where it's like pretty damning evidence here. Not saying you're not you don't deserve what is likely coming to you, but we have to get there ethically. We have to get there by following the rules of our court system. And maybe the rules are being followed, because this kind of gets into a gray area. Again, it's a 16-year-old. He is the one who has to say, yes, I want a speedy trial. But he's 16. He's being tried as an adult. And there's a lot of people around him, like I said, who have a vested interest in this going fast. And less spotlight going out over here around the environment which procured the 16-year-old. Again, your thoughts in the comments section, Substack, YouTube. We'll continue our conversation there. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's move over to another case that we're following. Timothy Hudson's federal trial just got pushed to September. Timothy Hudson is the 16-year-old stepbrother of Anna Kempner. He's accused of first-degree murder, aggravated S abuse. 16, like I said, tried as an adult, waived his rights to be tried as a minor, facing life in federal prison. He's reportedly on camera as the only person entering and leaving that stateroom. Anna Kempner's body was found hidden under the bed. So this isn't a question of who. And that changes everything here about how the defense has to approach this case. Bob Mata, Defense Diaries, he is with us to break down where all this goes. And I think the biggest question everybody has out of the gate on this is, you got the camera, it's pointed at the room, there's nobody coming and going, it's pretty evident who was in the room and who did what. But he's saying, not guilty. Not guilty can mean, I guess, you know, some different things depending on how they play it. But what is the realistic goal here of the defense of Timothy Hudson at this point? Because we got some interesting dynamics at play here. We have mom of Timothy not in the picture. Like, she's standing with stepdad of she wants nothing to do with him. So you got that all separated here. There isn't the parental support from mom at all on this, from what we're understanding. His dad is supporting him, but that's about it. So he's kind of out on his own here with the whole family that he was living with, stepping out, you know, and probably rightfully so. But it's an interesting dynamic when he's 16 years old and facing first-degree murder charges. What's the goal here? What do you do? How do you defend this kid?
Well, my inclination is to think that this will plead out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, as you can tell, the feds don't play.
Yeah.
You know, when they bring the case in, the federal court system doesn't play. You know, this is in fed cases go to trial way, way more quickly than state cases, just because that's how the federal courts operate. Those federal court judges aren't playing at all. You know, they're moving this thing along. And, you know, your only option if you're the defense on this thing is some kind of mental defect defense. The bigger likelihood, and I'm sure that they're having psychological evaluations done. And, you know, depending on how that comes back for the defense, you know, maybe that's your avenue in terms of moving forward at a trial. But in terms of kind of the guilt phase, it's a losing case, short of you having a mental defect defense that's kind of plausible, where you think you might be able to sell it to a jury. But as far as the way that the federal system works, if they've had psychiatrists and psychologists examining the kid and, you know, they're coming back like, well, you know, I don't see any kind of mental defect that's going to allow him to fall within the statute. And there's not going to be anything that we think is going to be plausible here. You know, and I'm not going to get on the stand and say that, you know, that he shouldn't be found responsible because of his mental defect or disease. So at that point, you're looking at your job becoming trying to get them to move off of murder one, first degree. Mm-hmm. You know, that becomes your goal. You're going to try to say, all right, look, on sentencing, if we were to go to trial, you know, do you bring up potential negligence of the parents? Dad knew.
That's kind of what I'm wondering.
Yeah, and I'm curious about that too. If he's being tried as an adult, does that impact the parents being culpable?
I mean, you're not bringing it. If it goes to trial, that's the only time that you're talking about this type of situation, because and you're not bringing it up in the guilt phase. You're bringing it up in the sentencing phase,
right?
Meaning that, you know, he's going to be found guilty, and you're trying to mitigate. So because he's being tried as an adult, it's a legal fiction, the fact that he is still a minor, you know. So during the sentencing phase, I'm going to be going in there and doing my best to argue, look, dad should have known better. Mom should have known better. Or stepmom should have known better.
Yeah.
They had to know. I mean, this was something that Anna brought up. This wasn't like it was a secret. There were issues. And, you know, the parents just seemed to completely forego that, you know. But like, again, that interplay with, am I bringing forth some kind of mental defect defense of any kind in terms of trying to explain what happened here? Is this kid just damaged? You know, I mean, look, when you kind of examine the factual scenario, the kid couldn't have thought that anybody was going to think it was anybody other than him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? This isn't like a well thought out crime. This is like, dude, you put your fish in a barrel, quite literally. You know, you're the only one. Like, if you've been on a cruise ship, you know that there's cameras everywhere because you can see them. They're not secreted away. They're right there for you. And that's part of the deterrence factor of you not acting a fool on a cruise ship. So, you know, it's one of those things where we don't know that much about what they've been able to do from the defense side of it in terms of really having those evaluations done, because that's really where the whole thing's going to lie for me. Otherwise, you're working out a plea with, you know, the federal sentencing guidelines, which that's a job in and of itself. Yeah. You know, like that's, it's a whole point system. It's very, very complicated. And you're really negotiating heavily with, you know, the feds and the government at that point. I mean, you're probably going to have to go in and do a proffer and you know, you're going to have to put your client in there and have to say what happened and why it happened. How did it come to be? And, you know, if they find that he's working with them and making their jobs easier, they're not wasting government money by taking it to a trial. And they're saying, look, we got you dead to rights here, bro. Just plead it out. You know, that's how you knock points off in terms of like negotiating that sentencing memo. But that's where this game's going to be. Like, I'll be the only reason that I see this thing not pleading out is if they come up with some rock solid mental defect defense.
And Bob, I got another question about behind the scenes, how stuff works. That's why I love having you on.
I love those questions.
Here's a guy, here's a young kid who, he's being charged as an adult, but like you said, he's still a child. When he's being counseled with counsel for defense, are his parents present? Are they part of it? Not part of it? I mean, or is it just them by themselves?
He's solo.
Yeah, is there an age that would?
Well, yeah, typically, I mean, once the charges have been filed and then the court determines, you know, after the state seeks to try him as an adult and the court agrees, at that point, he's being treated by the system as an adult.
Yeah, I was just curious because I was curious about whether the parents would try to influence defense at all, you know, for their favor versus him or anything like that, or if they had access to defense.
If you're the defense lawyer, the last thing you need is those two parents up in the business trying to, you know, because we've got it's a blended family situation.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a stepmother in here.
But isn't he also the defense counsel, the main conduit between family to get the kid things and everything like that too? So that is a tricky situation.
It is. You know, and ultimately, you're just asking for it, and they're going to have to turn it over. You know what I'm saying? You're like, your position in that situation is like, look, I'm doing my best here to defend your child, and what I'm asking for you, I need. Like, this isn't a debate. It's not a negotiation. You know, if these are things that I think could be helpful, you know, if he's got journals and things that I think I can use and turn over to a psychiatrist or psychologist and say, all right, this is where this kid's been at mentally for years. Here's the written proof of it. Then they've got to turn it over. They're not going to be able, like, you can't have family members coming in pretending that they're lawyers or they understand how the system works. It's just, you know, it's not optimal.
I don't know what to make of it, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I have been a bit surprised by the reaction of Timothy's biological mother, she's married to Anna's husband. This is the blended family. They both, through a statement through the husband, through Anna's dad, have said that they won't be attending the trial in September. In custody filings, Timothy's father has alleged Chantel told him she couldn't jeopardize her marriage by helping her own son. That's an allegation in those filings. Wow. I mean,
that's why I was asking about
if,
that
if so I well. Had a 16-year-old son who did something like this, I don't know that I'd be standing by them either, but I am, as a parent, a little bit surprised. The just sheer cut off, we want nothing to do with you. Good luck with the state. We're not even going to go to your trial. Attitude of mom in this and stepped. I mean, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, I don't know. I can't wrap my mind around where I would be in this sort of a situation, but it does strike me as a little bit, I don't know, odd a bit. And so my question is there any exposure for these parents, for mom, for the stepdad? Is there any criminal exposure, legal exposure, any sort of exposure that pushing Timothy off to the sharks and saying good fucking luck would benefit them as to not be standing by their her son in any way, shape, or form, and not even necessarily just in any sort of innocence capacity, but just being there as a supporting role because she gave birth to him. Anything like that? Is there any reason why they would be like, "Woo, go away"? Considering all the allegations that we've seen thrown at this family, and they are that allegations of chokeholds and shitty parenting and all that we've seen thrown that way leading up to this. That's where I'm sitting. Like, this is a weird dynamic at play.
It's not their first rodeo.
Jump in there.
Yeah. Before you go by, I was just saying, all that says to me is that they've seen all this before. And that's like this is like the final tipping point for.
Is it? I mean, is it just that they just had enough?
I think
so. Like, screw off.
So think about this. You know, we all have kids, and yeah. Bob's got grandkids. If this was a one-off, you'd be fighting tooth and nail, trying to figure out what happened. What's going on? He's got a broken brain. Something triggered him. I mean, yeah. You'd be very, very close. Like, I'm close to my kids. We're all close to our kids. We would be trying to figure this shit out because we'd be getting closer. Not necessarily we'd be defending, but we'd be trying to figure out what went wrong. And for them to say, "Oh, we're done,"
that's what's weird to me.
It's not weird if you've seen it before.
That's true. I mean, I can kind of get that, where it's like, "Fuck it, you've caused enough problems in our world for the last 16 years. You're a broken brain. We're done." I mean, or being close to you presents the liability and exposure to. I don't know.
Why both? So let me get clear. So, Anna, which parent is Anna's? On the ship, on the cruise.
On the ship, it is dad. Her dad is on the ship, and stepmom is the mom to the alleged murderer, her son, the 16-year-old.
Now, are they still together that we know?
Yes. Yes. And okay, and they've said together that they're not going to the trial. She's pretty much standing with stepdad, not there for her 16-year-old alleged murderous son at all, from what we understand. We learned that through a lot of the custody, which I don't know. I could see, I mean,
It's not as simple as that. I hear exactly what you're saying, T. It's like, this isn't a situation where your kid was out on these streets and did some shit and you weren't privy to it. You didn't buy the tickets for the cruise.
Yeah. I mean, they're saying,
they're intermeshed in this thing.
Prior to this, they're like, they're the three amigos. We all get along great. Everything's wonderful. Well, so which is it?
Exists a world in which I can see some kind of criminal charges being levied against those parents, man.
And that's what the weird behavior is to me. Like, why are you getting so, why are you distancing yourself so far?
That's what
so
I you don't, think it is.
Bob, this goes to my question to you about the parents being involved at all with the defense, because in my mind, with this kind of behavior, they'd be begging for a plea.
Totally.
Because they don't want anyone digging up into their shit.
That's what I'm feeling.
That is exactly where that conflict comes in, man. And it's kind of a fascinating scenario because you have that dynamic of these folks weren't married all that long, right? Like, this is like a relatively new relationship. What, a couple year, 2 years max? Yeah.
Less.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean,
it's a lot of data points in a short amount of time, is what I think.
Yeah, a lot of data points in a short amount of time. And you have to wonder just how strong is that relationship really? Because, like, you have parents that have kids, and if they lose that child, and I'm talking 10, 15, 20 year marriages where those two people find it difficult if one or the other perceives that one of the other parents maybe could have caused or prevented that child from dying, and they just can't get over it. Here, you've got this situation where these people are not in a long-term relationship. They've got this kid who's clearly damaged. I don't know how he's damaged. I'm no psychologist. I'm not going to pretend to be one, but there's something wrong with him, right? He's got issues. And man, if you're like, I'm parents, I'm getting two separate lawyers. I'm not coming in as a team on this because that lack of knowledge, because who knows what stepmom knows about her son. She's been dealing with this kid his whole life.
Yeah.
Dad knows what mom has shared and what dad has observed and what dad has been told by his daughter. And that's it.
And you know, still brought him on the cruise.
Still brought him on the cruise, which is.
And put him in the same room.
Their legal peril. exists in this case.
Yeah, and think about that too. Again, going back to our own thought experiment with our own kids. So you've just met someone, you recently got married, you've known for a couple of years, and you've known your own child for 16, and you said, "No, I'm done with you. I'm sticking with this 2-year relationship."
I mean, the math doesn't math, right? I saw him over the weekend getting her diploma, and you know, I can't imagine being them, and my heart breaks for them that his daughter is dead. And I mean, this is horrible. I cannot fucking fathom it. But I also, I'm sorry, this is really weird optics of the distance from the son. I get him saying, fuck it, I'm out. I don't get her. And especially when they're all like, oh, everybody's great. We can all stay in the same room. If you're all this happy, go lucky, and everything's great, I don't know that you just like turn the corner on your own son like that if there's nothing else there. That's my conjecture. That's my opinion. I don't know.
But the weirdness is fucking weird. It's the same room weirdness. Everything else fits. Like, hey, you got a crazy son. This has been a final straw. You know, we're banning him because we did all we could. But if you did all you could, you'll want to put him in the same room. That's where they're screwed.
Yeah. Or what did you do that you don't want anybody to know about, I guess, is the bigger question. What's going to come out in discovery that we're like, state, do just punish him, be done with it, and we're going to move on over here. We're all a good family. Like, okay, what do you want no one looking at over here? Because there seems to be some smoke, and there seems to be a lot of people who have stories about not the best parenting that may point in a direction here of not being the greatest, like specifically a chokehold.
That's it. I mean, like, and that's what's playing behind the scenes. I don't give a fuck what their public appearance is.
Yeah.
We all know. You know, what goes on behind the four walls of their house is
a
completely different thing than we're seeing publicly. And if they're smart, they've sought counsel from an attorney, and that attorney is probably directing the path here based on what that attorney's learning from the federal government.
Sure.
And, you know, and if they're poking around, because look, you could bet your butt. These people, if this thing's going to trial, are 100% witnesses. They're being called, you know.
Yeah.
It's a super tragic, sticky situation, but I'm 100% with UT. There's something else. Gacy's mom sat in his trial.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, mama bears just don't up and abandon their kids.
What's motivating this is my question.
There's something else, right? Yeah. What is it? And, you know, I mean,
Corey Richards,
only time will tell.
That's Corey. Yeah. And maybe we're dealing with that type of a person. I don't know. I just don't know. It just feels weird.
She's special. Like,
yes.
Really bad special.
We know some special moms that would abandon their kids.
Yeah.
We do.
The Corey Richens and Lori Vallows of the world. They exist. So I mean, she's not necessarily the bad guy here, though, you know. But again, it's that thing. It has those kind of those same factors that you look at with these school shooters where they're trying parents. It's what did they know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where this case lives potentially.
Yeah.
And it might not be the feds. It could be, you know, the state, if there's a state that's available, because it was out on, you know, out on the waters, and, you know, that's a different jurisdiction thing, but it's interesting.
It feels
tragic. It sucks.
It feels like
they're stones they don't want unturned is what it feels like to me.
And
Bob, you brought up a good point. Yeah, you brought up a good point, Bob. Would you advise, if you were their defense, would you advise the parents to break contact with the son and abandon him because of self-preservation?
If I got the sense that either, because I don't know if the feds have a statute in which they could bring it, like the states do. Like the states, Michigan was able to come after the Crumbleys, and then I think that was Michigan, and then I think it was Georgia came after Gray, you know, for the Colt Gray shootings, and they got convictions on both of them. And at the end of the day, it was the knowledge. And Tony and I talked about the Crumbley thing pretty heavily back when that thing was going on, and you know, and Tony and I both agreed on that thing. It's like, you get that fucking test that's got a picture of a gun drawn on it with a dead body with blood flowing out, and I can't stop the thoughts, and the day of the shooting, and mom doesn't take his ass out of school.
Yeah,
you know, and it was the same thing with Gray, where you've got the shrine in the room and dad's oblivious to it, or, you know, just saw it and didn't think much of, you know. So, I mean, if you have that kind of situation where mom's got that kind of knowledge, you're going to have somebody in the background that has a law degree saying, we need to play this carefully because you're potentially in hot water here. I mean, to me, it's the most, I'm guessing, we're speculating here. There's no question about that, but it makes the most sense.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Thanks, a lot of questions. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.